Our next speaker is Dr. David Owles. He's a professor of pediatrics, psychiatry, and preventive medicine at the University of Colorado Health Sciences Center, and he's director of the Prevention Research Center for Family and Child Health. He received the Exemplary Prevention Program Award from the American Psychological Association, Prevention Award from the National Mental Health Association, and a National Program Award for Child Abuse Prevention from the Greater Houston Chapter of the National Committee for the Prevention of Child Abuse. So join me in welcoming Dr. David Olds. His topic today is improving the social and economic well-being of families with home visiting early in the life cycle.
Thank you for inviting me. It's really a pleasure to have a chance to talk with you about what we've been doing for the last 20 years. What I would like to do is talk about the promotion of families' economic self-sufficiency in the context of improving a variety of other aspects of their functioning. And I think that what I'd like to start with is what many of us in this room have, I think, noticed in the last few weeks, which is the intense media attention that's been given to early childhood with a special issue of Newsweek, Time, the ABC special on brain development and early childhood initiatives that was aired on Monday night. A lot of this media attention that's been given to early childhood issues has grown out of recent scientific advances in our understanding of the importance of early experience in shaping the structure of children's neurological systems. And I think that it's safe to say that these scientific advances increase our responsibility to make sure that children are adequately protected and nurtured during pregnancy and their early years so that their neurological systems are protected and nurtured and so that they can become more productive citizens as when they become adults. The real challenge for us, I think, is knowing what to do about it. I'd like to use my time this morning to tell you about a program of research that my colleagues and I have been conducting for the past 20 years that gives us hope about what might be accomplished with carefully crafted prenatal and early childhood home visitation services provided by nurses. Now, if someone could turn the lights down, I'll move on with these slides here. Okay, great. The program is designed to improve the outcomes of pregnancy, children's health and development, and parents' own economic self-sufficiency early in the life cycle in an effort to establish more favorable trajectories for families at risk. The specific problems that we are interested in affecting include preterm delivery and low birth weight. Preterm delivery and low birth weight are the leading correlates of infant mortality in Western societies, and they are major contributors to children's compromised neurologic development in utero. We're also interested in improving women's health-related behaviors, such as smoking, alcohol consumption, use of illegal drugs, improved diet, early detection of emerging obstetric complications that independently can contribute to children's neurodevelopmental impairment. Child abuse and neglect. Child abuse and neglect is truly a national emergency. We now know that there are profound neurological consequences in addition to psychological ramifications resulting from children's being abused and neglected. Childhood injuries are the leading cause of infant and childhood mortality among children aged 1 through 14. Rapid, successive, unintended pregnancies and reduced participation in the workforce are two factors that conspire to enmesh families in poverty and increase the likelihood that these problems that you see in the slide are more likely to occur. When we began this program of research over 20 years ago, we would not have allowed ourselves to imagine that we truly might have an effect on things like school failure, conduct disorder, crime and delinquency. But as you'll see, what we're now finding is that indeed providing appropriate, well-designed support to families in those very earliest months and years of life can truly have an effect on these aspects of functioning. How does that happen? This model gives you a broad overview about how we think what happens early in the life cycle can have an effect on later functioning. As I mentioned, we're interested in helping women improve their prenatal health, which affects their neurodevelopmental functioning of the child, which can affect both the child's cognitive functioning and the child's capacity for emotion and behavior regulation, the child's capacity to focus attention, to be whether or not the child is going to be impulsive, is going to have a lot of negative effect, can be affected by the degree to which the child's neurologic system is intact, which can make it easier or more difficult for parents to care for the child. The program also has a protocol that is designed to affect the qualities of caregiving that parents provide to their child to become more responsible parents early in the child's life, which also can have an effect on the child's functioning independently of this neurodevelopmental impairment line, as well as an effect on maternal life course. Again, closely spaced pregnancies, welfare dependence, and even substance abuse, we now think we can have an effect on by promoting adaptive functioning in each of these three major realms simultaneously in the early years of the child's life. I want to emphasize that the program itself has been developed over this 20-year period so that today nurses have studied, have structured written protocols and intensive training to guide them in working with mothers and families who live in highly complex, challenging, and often dangerous situations. We've examined this program in three large-scale randomized trials. Randomized trials are the most scientifically credible method of determining the efficacy of health, social service, and medical interventions. Randomized trials are the kinds of tests that the FDA requires of drugs to establish their safety and efficacy. The first study was carried out in Elmira, New York. We've just completed a 15-year follow-up of the children and families to look at what's happened 15 years later. That first study was carried out with Caucasian families. We replicated this study in a major urban area with African-American families and have now completed analysis of the effects of the program through age 2 and are now conducting a 5- and 6-year follow-up of the mothers and children as the children enter school. And more recently, we've begun a study that examines the relative efficacy of paraprofessional or lay community home health visitors who are hired from the community who share many of the characteristics of the families that they're serving. And we're contrasting the relative efficacy of that service provider versus nurses. There is a lot of paraprofessional home visitation being promoted now nationally, but unfortunately we have very, very little scientifically credible evidence to support the efficacy of paraprofessional home visitation models. Okay, the original study was conducted with the program model that I just described for you. It was a semi-rural setting, 400 families, almost all Caucasians. A key feature of this program is that we work with families where the mothers have had no previous live births. And the advantage of that is that we're able to capture families at a critical stage in mothers' own transition and often fathers' own transition to parenthood. They're making critical decisions about the kinds of parents they're going to be, what they're going to do with their lives in terms of staying in school, finding work, and so forth. And we think that focus on first-time parents is essential in producing the kinds of effects that you're going to see in just a second. 85% of the sample was poor, unmarried, or teenaged. This was a randomized design, and it's what we call an efficacy trial. The investigators were heavily involved in the design of the intervention and monitoring its implementation. The nurses stayed with their families for the entire 2.5 years that they were involved with them. So we think that this produces an estimate of program effects that probably is an upper bound of what one might expect if one were to try to disseminate this program into new communities where there's not quite the same level of intensive investment. The program effects may diminish some. We're holding open that possibility. Now, some of the key findings from the earliest phases of this trial. When we examined the effects of the program on rates of child abuse and neglect based on state central registry records during the first 2 years of the child's life, the rates of maltreatment in the comparison group were about 20% versus about 5% in the nurse-visited condition, an 80% difference. This difference was concentrated in women who had all three of the risk characteristics that we use for sample recruitment, that is, those who were poor, unmarried, and especially teenaged. Overall, for all nurse-visited women, in the first 2 years of the child's life, there was a 56% reduction in the number of emergency department encounters, but those were especially strong for emergency department encounters where injuries were detected on the part of the child. And during the first 4 years of the child's life, among women who were low income and unmarried, those most likely to be using welfare services, there was a 43% difference in the rates of subsequent pregnancy and an 84% increase in the amount of employment. Some of the details of these statistics are provided in the briefing book that you have, that Karen and people have put together for this presentation. When we look at the cost of the program in $1980, what we found was that for 2.5 years of intervention, that the cost of the program was a little over $3,000. And the cost savings for low-income families exceeded the cost of the program by the time the children were four. In other words, the break-even point was sometime around age three. And so that the net cost of the program by the time the children were four was negative $180. The benefits had started to accrue. These findings were published in a journal, Medical Care, that I can get you the citation on if you like. What we found was that the cost savings were distributed among government budgets in this way. What you see is that the major cost savings came in the form of reductions in AFDC and food stamp expenditures, and that's because women were having fewer subsequent pregnancies and were participating in the workforce to a greater extent, and that creates a certain multiplicative effect because of both reduced eligibility and fewer families, members in the household who require monthly benefits. The other savings were smaller. I don't have time. We might talk about this later. I'll tell you why I think that's the case. Now, from our 15-year follow-up, though, what happens during the 15-year period after birth of that first child? We see a 33% reduction overall for in the rates of births, subsequent live births, to low-income unmarried mothers. We also see that there is a really very large difference, treatment control difference, in the interval between the birth of the first child and the birth of the second child. This is very important from the standpoint of women's being able to stay in school, find work, and provide appropriate, responsible attention to the care of the first child. What we see is that there is a 30-month difference, treatment control difference, in total AFDC utilization in that first. That's 2.5 year treatment control difference in AFDC utilization in the first 15 years of the child's life. And we see that mothers themselves reported a large reduction in the rates, the extent to which they were behaviorally impaired due to substances like alcohol and illegal drugs during that 15-year period. And the mothers themselves, this was a finding, frankly, that we had not anticipated. We expected to have an effect on maternal life course, but we did not expect to see such a large effect on a mother's own arrest records. We think that this is a reflection of their gaining control over their lives, and they're making the right choices about in terms of staying in school, finding work, and so forth, and choosing better partners. But this is over 70% reduction in the rates of arrests. And by the way, this is based on New York State Division of Criminal Justice Service records, and the archive data shows stronger effects than what we see with maternal self-report. Also, what we see is that the rates of child abuse and neglect, the treatment control difference in the rates of state-verified cases of child abuse and neglect grow over time. The effects are much stronger in the 4 to 15-year period than they were in the 0 to 4-year age range. And we think that that's a result of the mothers gaining greater control over their economic self-sufficiency and lives in general. An effect that we're anticipating and we're pleased to see is that there were significant reductions in the rates of arrest for the children. This amounts to over 50% reduction in the number of arrests, the times that the children were arrested by by their 15th year. We think I should let you know that there were no differences in the rates of self-reported antisocial behavior that did not lead to arrests. And we think that is simply because adolescence is a period of just a lot of disruptive. They're adolescents and they're acting out. What we think we're preventing is the very early onset conduct disorder that leads to more violence and persistent. Persistently criminal offending that is contributing to so much of the distress and lack of safety of all of us in our society. It's also associated with child abuse and neglect and neurodevelopmental impairment on the part of the child. Now, one of the hallmarks of good evidence is being able to reproduce it. So that's why we conducted the replication study in Memphis and a major urban area with an African-American sample, and where we had less control over the program design itself. We registered 1,100 families in that study, randomly assigned them. There was very low attrition rates. This is really the methodology in the study we feel very good about. But this came closer to an effectiveness trial. Thanks. In the sense that the nurses, we conducted the study at the height of the nursing shortage. Nurses were able to walk across the street and earn $4 or $5 more an hour than what we were able to pay them out of a grant. So we had a fair amount of turnover among the nurses, and that we know compromised the implementation of the program. Nevertheless, we saw during pregnancy, among other major findings, a reduction in the rates of serious hypertensive disorders of pregnancy. This amounts to about a 22% reduction in preeclampsia. We see an increase in the rates of breastfeeding, and we see we knew in Memphis that we would not see reductions in the rates of state-verified cases of child abuse and neglect, because all of our pretest and pilot work that we did in the community showed us that the rates of state-verified cases of child maltreatment were too low to be statistically significant. So we expected to see effects in healthcare encounters where injuries were detected, and lo and behold, we see it, both for all types of encounters, as well as especially the mean number of days that children are hospitalized with injuries and ingestions. This slide shows us the diagnoses that were associated with the three children who were hospitalized with injuries or ingestions in the first 2 years of the child's life. Let me just point out a couple of things to you. All of these children were hospitalized at 12 months of age or older. That is, they were mobile. Two of the three cases involved ingestions. Look what's happening in the comparison group. I need to point out that the denominators are different because there are twice as many comparison families as there are nurse-visited families. But over 40% of these children were hospitalized before the children were 6 months of age. Over 40% of these children were hospitalized with fractured long bones, fractured skulls, subdural hematomas. These are bruises and bleeding under the skull resulting from head trauma. The pattern of diagnoses that we see here is dramatically different, and it really suggests that what we have done is prevented serious dysfunctional caregiving that leads to abuse or neglect. We also see in Memphis the emergence of an effect on maternal life course through the reduction in rates of subsequent pregnancy. It's the reduction in subsequent pregnancy that allows the program to be in a position to promote, we think, eventual participation of the workforce and improvement in maternal life course. That's the end of my slides. A couple of things that I want to say. The findings from this program of research, thanks, have been used by many organizations to promote a wide variety of home visitation programs for women, for pregnant women and parents of young children. But unless programs share the essential elements of the program tested in these trials, other programs are not likely to produce the kinds of results found in this research. We've published two major reviews of the randomized trials of prenatal and early childhood home visitation programs and concluded that most do not work. The programs that show the greatest promise for producing the kinds of effects listed here employ nurses, begin during pregnancy, follow the families at least through the second year of the child's life, are comprehensively designed to address families' most essential needs regarding pregnancy, parenting, and economic well-being, and have detailed clinically tested protocols to guide the visitor's work with families. But even when communities choose to develop programs based on models with good scientific evidence, all too often the programs are watered down and compromised in the process of being scaled up. We've begun some work that we hope will address this problem. We've recently been invited by the U.S. Justice Department to disseminate the program in high-crime neighborhoods around the country. We hope to use this demonstration effort to learn more about what it will take to develop the program in new communities with fidelity to its essential elements. We're establishing the program in 6 communities in the country, and while the final selection is not complete, we're working with sites in California, Missouri, Oklahoma, and Florida, and we have some alternate sites in Wisconsin and Washington State. One of the reasons that we're pleased about this work is that state and local governments are securing financial support for the program out of existing sources of funds, such as TANF, Medicaid, child abuse, and crime prevention dollars. They're making these investments in part because the evidence indicates that expenditures in these budgets will be reduced later on. This means that the cost of this program, which in 1997 dollars is about $6,700 per family for 2.5 years of service, can be shared by a variety of government agencies. This reduces the strain on any one budget. While there are less expensive services, there are less expenses because they're less intensive and comprehensive, and we find no evidence that less intensive services prevent child abuse or neglect, welfare dependence, or crime. In general, as health and social welfare policy is redesigned in the near future, I believe that it makes sense to begin with programs that have been tested, replicated, and found to work. Thanks.
Any questions for Dr. Olds? The question is, could you talk a little bit more about paraprofessionals and how that relates to your comments about watering down the program? Are they as effective as nurses?
First of all, I think that from the standpoint of promoting new occupations, it's a very attractive approach in this welfare environment. So let's be clear about that. But we've looked at all the randomized trials that have been conducted that have employed various types of service providers. And I know of a couple of trials that have employed paraprofessionals that show modest effects, but they aren't showing the kinds of effects that we see with nurses. I mean, the Gutelius study that conducted in the 60s and early 70s, for example, in Washington, D.C., shows effects that mirror or the kinds of things that I showed you on this set of slides here, but that they employed nurses. The reason that nurses, I think, can be so powerful at this stage in the game, in the life cycle, is that they're addressing physical health issues that can be a major hook for pregnant women and parents of young children because of the physical health issues that are so of paramount concern to pregnant women and parents with young infants. And it can be done in a way that is not stigmatizing. You're not identifying families for being at risk of maltreatment. You're saying to them, or child abuse and neglect, you're saying to them, all pregnant women having first babies have concerns, and we're here to help you address those kinds of issues. The families in our trials, at least, have told us that they really value having someone who's knowledgeable. Our experience in looking at, and talking with other people around the country who are conducting randomized trials that have employed paraprofessionals, unfortunately, is that there's a great diversity in the background and skill in paraprofessionals, and the likelihood that they're going to produce the kinds of effects that we see here, I think, my considered judgment is that it will not show the kinds of effects that we've seen here, but we don't have the evidence yet. We have the National Committee to Prevent Child Abuse and Neglect's trial of the Healthy Start program in Hawaii, and it's very hard to say really what kinds of effects have been produced from when you look at that report carefully. There are 2 other trials that are being conducted of the Healthy Families America program, one in San Diego, one by Ann Duggan at Johns Hopkins. Those trials are not yet in. But I guess my point is that we don't have the evidence. And I think that on clinical grounds, and when you look at the results of programs that have shown effects, they tend to employ nurses.
How many visits do they make, and when do they start? During pregnancy, during the first year?
Yeah. There's a difference between what they're scheduled to complete and what they actually do complete, of course, because families are not often there and so forth. They have completed, on average, in both Elmira and Memphis, around 8 visits during pregnancy, and they have completed, during the first 2 years of the baby's life, around 24 or 25 visits in the first 2 years of life. They are scheduled to complete about twice that many during those time periods.
Two questions. Was this most of these studies done in single family versus extended family households? And will you disclose your sites here in Wisconsin?
The answer is that in the Elmira study, 60% of the women when they registered in the study were unmarried, but many of them were living with their own parents. And the program is designed in a way to engage other concerned adults in this program to create a more cohesive, informal support system for mother during pregnancy and the early years of the child's life. 97% of the mothers in the Memphis replication study were unmarried. Again, many of them living with extended family members. But the key is that we try to engage fathers, we engage grandmothers, sisters, friends, anyone who is showing an active, keen interest in the well-being of this mother and the baby.